Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 149, recorded Tuesday, March 19th, 2019. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: dining single, and hey, from the archives, airlines should tell us just a little bit more. So coming to you today from the Hyatt Place in State College, Pennsylvania, home of Penn State and the Nittany Lions, I've broken out the mobile recording unit, doing a quick flash out here before we head out to Brittany and do spring break vacation. I have to tell you, though, that over the past, since we last spoke, I'm feeling, you know, kind of a bit more positive about life. After a couple of warm weather getaways, an afternoon meeting in Phoenix that I happily turned into a 3-day stay by flying in early for a prep session, and then volunteering to stay late in case our client session runs a little bit long, and then follow that up with a long weekend with friends on the Gulf side of Florida, down in Marco Island. You know, I have to tell you, it was a nice break to be able to walk outside without layering up coats and scarves and hats, and without taking an Arctic blast into the face. And not that it was too toasty in Phoenix, but I was walking around in a blazer, just passing people, natives, I'd guess, in their like full-on puffy down jackets. Not that they were wrong. It's just that my reference point was that minus 22 degree polar vortex day the prior month. Kind of reminded me of a time some years ago when I was doing a project in Johannesburg, South Africa, in July, sort of our summer, their winter. We were going to a restaurant for dinner. The inside was full, but the outside tables were available. The owner apologized. He ended up offering us blankets. My colleague from Detroit was wearing a polo shirt. I was in a dress shirt with my sleeves rolled up. "Thanks," I told him, but you know what? We're fine. Halfway through the meal, he comes up offering to move us inside now that a table had freed up. He's wearing a parka. And we said, no, really, we're okay, as we sat there in our short sleeves and rolled up sleeves. Different reference points, definitely, on what was cold. Both trips out to Phoenix and then down to Fort Myers Airport in Florida were full of young families, I think also getting away from the cold, maybe to stay with parents or grandparents who'd gotten smart and retired to someplace with more reasonable weather climes. I flew Southwest to Phoenix and then United to Fort Myers, and I came to appreciate what before this was to me an undiscovered benefit of Southwest's open seating. Because I was in boarding group B, the families with young children boarded before me. So walking down the aisle, I could spot the crying babies. Well, there and there and there and, whoa, oh, there too. And then I could just keep walking until I was behind them all. Sure, I was in the back of the plane and it took me a little bit to deplane, but I have to tell you, it was a very small price to pay for 3 hours of relative peace. So following up, in past episodes, we've talked about, you know, the bare bones budget airlines, Spirit and Frontier in the U.S., Ryanair and EasyJet in Europe, and Wow Air. I love saying that, Wow Air, and Norwegian, sort of as the second comings of Laker Airways, doing the transatlantic budget flights. Of course, of those, I've flown Frontier, EasyJet, and Wow Air, because I want to say Wow Air, which as a group seems like the the less severe set of the budget airlines. Ryanair and Spirit always seem to have a harder edge about their budgetness. And then, of course, you know, on top of that, and really driven by those budget airlines, is that, you know, kind of their impact on the mainline carriers with their basic economy fares, United, American, Delta. And usually when I look at the mainline carriers' basic economy fares, the difference, you know, of those fares, the difference versus the regular economy fare, quite honestly, just isn't big enough to make up for the extra hassles. But on this trip down to Fort Myers, down to Florida, the difference on United was over $100 a ticket. And so Irene and I figured, you know, we could put up with a few hassles for over $200. But as we dug a little further, actually, we didn't find that there would be as many hassles as we thought. Because we were both United Gold, there was no limitation on our carry-on bags, and we still got to board in our usual Group 1. So really, the only downgrades were that we had to pay to reserve seats and that we could not book them in Economy Plus, which is in United the aisles with the extra legroom. So, but even after paying for the reserved seats, you know, still, actually, we still saved enough to pay for a couple of nice dinners of grilled grouper. Our friends who had joined us down there from Milwaukee had flown down on American through DFW really without a hassle. Their flight back, a direct flight to Milwaukee on Frontier, not so much. Their flight was supposed to leave at 7:45 p.m. around lunch. They received a note that their flight was delayed by 5 hours. You know, what? They checked that again, and then I pulled up the FlightAware app, searched for their flight, and then started kind of walking those, you know, walking it back. So, okay, you know, where's my plane now? Kept hitting that button, going through kind of the planned flight legs until we found the actual plane. It was still on the ground in Milwaukee 6 hours after its scheduled departure time. Now, the weather wasn't that bad, so it had to be a maintenance problem, not that Frontier was saying anything. Well, these sorts of things are a huge problem when flying budget and regional airlines, because their model is really to kind of sweat their assets, to bounce those planes from place to place, rather than flying in and out of a hub where they could swap out a busted plane if need be. So that 6 hour delay was just going to cascade through the day's schedule. And unfortunately, our friends were the last flight of the day for that plane. They finally left Fort Myers at 2:45 a.m., which, oh my God, I just couldn't believe that. Which I have to tell you, though, is something I've noticed about Frontier. I have never seen them cancel a flight, no matter how late they leave. Now, a regional airline would have canceled the flight way earlier, but not Frontier, at least not in my experience. I don't know how their crews don't time out, but, you know, in some way, I kind of admire them for getting you home no matter what time. Would it be better not to take a 7 hour delay? Yeah, but, you know, I guess you could say at least they got you home. This year, I got dropped a status level on Hertz from President's Circle down to 5-star. I didn't do 20 rentals last year, and I missed an email offer in December to pay some of their points to keep my status. I came and went through the inbox. But I have to tell you, I can't say that I've noticed the downgrade all that much. I mean, when I was in Phoenix, I snagged this great Chrysler 300, you know, complete with custom black rims and the red brake pads. It was a nice car. And then in Fort Myers, I got a brand new GMC Terrain SUV that held 4 adults, Irene and myself, and then the other couple from Milwaukee. It was very comfortable. Though I have to say that the Terrain threw me for a loop when I got in. Now, I've rented all sorts of cars. I get in, I pair my phone to the Bluetooth, I adjust the mirrors, I put it in drive, and I pull out. Now, with this Terrain, I was good with all of that right up until the put it in drive step. I looked down at the console. there's like no gear shift, no gear dial. You know, that seems to be the Chrysler thing. And then, of course, so then I grab the stock on the right-hand side of the steering wheel and manage just to turn on the windshield wipers. I'm looking all over. I mean, WTF, where is that damn gear shift? And then from the back seat, Kristen, our Milwaukee passenger, points out to the, you know, just points right under the climate control, and she says, "It's right there." And then I see a line of buttons, P, R, N, D. So I push the D button really hard, and then off we go. Now, I have to say that the last time I saw a push-button gear selector was when I was a kid riding in my dad's friend's old Plymouth. I mean, come on, GMC. I mean, do we really need another type of gear selection? I mean, searching the internet later for the Terrain's gear buttons, I found a whole slew of links to articles titled "The Worst Shift Design of 2018. Which prominently featured these buttons. I mean, I don't know, though, at the end of the day, I really don't know what was worse, the actual buttons or me, the alpha road warrior, getting backseat instructions on how to put a rental car in gear. You know, another new thing, actually, that I learned at Hertz Fort Myers, besides where to find gear buttons, is that for Hertz Gold customers, there's no additional driver fee for your spouse. Now, I've been in Hertz Gold since it started, but I've never really connected to this benefit. And it saves real money. Additional driver fees can run $10 a day, and just the hassle of registering. Rather than getting in the car and driving off, you end up having to go back up to the booth and queue up. I don't know, it's just one more reason that I really like the Hertz Gold program. In PR news, Travel Commons made our little local newspaper in an installment of their Ask the Expert series with the subheadline, "How can travel be more relaxing and fun?" There you go. That's me. When the only thing that would have been better would be, you know, subtitle "The Voice of the Traveler." But Sandy, the reporter, managed to work that in later on in the article. So anyhow, when she had emailed me to schedule the interview, she wanted to talk about advice for successful spring break travel. It's getting about that time in Chicago. So I started off talking about how spring break families should avoid traveling during road warrior rush hours, sort of Monday mornings and Thursday evenings. Sandy wrote, "Boarding a plane filled with busy professionals can quickly rob you of that pre-vacation high." And she continued, "Peacock," that would be me, "Peacock advises leisure travelers to avoid sharing a plane with those potential buzzkills." Buzzkills such as me. I mean, the last thing a family heading for Disney wants is to encounter people like me just sort of power walking down the concourse. I also recounted some of the tips that you guys have all seen in my top holiday travel tips posts, if you actually go to the website and read them. You know, fly early in the day, avoid regional jets, and no one and done outfits so you can get everything you need into the carry-on. And then I talked about also turning long layovers into mini vacations and used the example of our upcoming Stockholm layover. Of course, I didn't mention that for me, a lot of these layovers really just turn into taproom crawls, kind of like last year's video that we did of coming out of, you know, for Midway Airport in Chicago, looking at kind of a layover taproom tour. And yeah, I got to say, I'm looking forward to the Stockholm stop. Andrew and I are looking forward to it. Thanks to Travel Commons listener Rob Cheshire's custom Google map of the Stockholm taprooms. No, I figured that might be a bit too much for our nice local paper. Sandy turned our 45-minute conversation really into a nice article. I posted a picture of the article on the Travel Commons Facebook page, since that nice little local newspaper doesn't seem to put any of their issues online. Back in episode 120, March 2016, I asked the question, Where do physical guidebooks fit in the world of apps, review websites, social media, podcasts? Back then, I was planning Andrews and my visit to Iceland. Now, getting ready to head over to Brittany, France for 10 days, I actually bought 2 physical guidebooks to take with us. Irene wanted DK's Eyewitness Travel. It was her favorite out of the stack of guidebooks she checked out of the library. And I did, you know, for mine, I did a bit of a throwback, picked up our what has always been our go-to guidebook from our PK, pre-kids, days of travel, Michelin's Green Guide. So I have to tell you, the DK book is definitely more visually punchy, but I figured Michelin, a French company, really should have Brittany nailed, really covered pretty well. And they had just published a new edition just last month in February. You know, maybe I'm getting lazy in my old age, but I'm kind of glad to have at least a bunch of this stuff just in one spot. A bit of local history, touring maps, city guides, sort of rather than having to rummage through multiple PDFs in an Evernote folder on my phone or tablet. However, I did take a pass on Amazon's recommended add-on of Michelin's Brittany Road and Tourist Map number 512. Instead, I topped up my local UK SIM for 2.5 gigabytes of mobile data. I got to tell you, I'm still sticking with Google Maps. I may be old school, but I have to tell you, I am not going back to the dark ages of paper maps. And hey, if you've got any travel rants, questions, a story, a comment, travel tip, voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is, as always, comments, comments at travelcommons.com, or you can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or go to the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is dining single. Our daughter Claire is heading down to London for her first week of spring break, and then will meet us in Paris for our Brittany trip for her second week of spring break. I got to tell you, I remember when spring break was just, you know, kind of the wraparound Easter long weekend when I was in high school. And then when I went to college, I got tops 1 week of spring break. Just goes to show that these millennial kids, it's all about them. Anyhow, as we were planning Claire's London trip, we got talking about eating alone on the road. I have to tell you, years ago, it was a much more awkward situation. Sort of the host would escort you to what ended up being some small table off in the corner. The server was a bit ticked off because there was only one of you, so it was going to be a small check, and he or she then knew it was going to be a small tip. You'd sit there, read the newspaper or a book between courses to keep yourself occupied, and you'd sort of wrap it up pretty quickly and then head back to the hotel. Now, for guy travelers, really the sports bar was, and you know, I have to say still is, the exception to that rule. I mean, fine, hostess, sit me in a booth alone as long as I have a clear view of the walls of TV screen showing all ESPN all the time. ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN3, ESPNU, ESPN News. Look, no need for a book, especially really here we are in the next couple of weeks starting off March Madness when we're going to be watching the opening rounds of the NCAA tournament where I can actually see maybe 2 or 3 games at once. Rush out, turn it over quickly, head back to the hotel room. Hell no, I got a bunch of screens here. Give me another one of those large Coors lights. We haven't even hit halftime. Now, most restaurants nowadays serve a full menu at the bar. I mean, complete with a full setup, placemats, maybe a bread basket. You know, it might be a touch cramped at happy hour, but it's usually nice to be sort of in the main flow of things rather than off in a corner. And then this trend towards sort of small plates, shared plates, you know, while it's getting a bit tired when you're dining with a group, sort of like, you know, the incessant negotiation. Okay, what can we all agree on? You know, maybe not great. Maybe it's getting tired for groups, but it works great for the single diner. Because really, you know, if I want a bit of variety without overeating, I now have a lot more choices than I used to, which, you know, my old choices were kind of sushi or tapas bars. Not that those are bad choices. For example, I have no doubt that Claire will find her way down to the bar seating for really her favorite restaurant, Barrafina, down in Soho in London. But it's nice to be able to branch out a little bit. Now, sitting at the bar, it also gave you a chance for a little social interaction, sort of broke the cave-like nature of your hotel room. And there was a bit of serendipity, maybe. I mean, with the bartender, maybe with the guy sitting next to you. Now, some years ago on my 2,100-mile sort of circle driving tour through the South, when I was in Louisville, you know, I was sitting next to a guy and sitting in a really nice beer bar, Holy Grail, kind of a converted church. I think it was like around St. Matthew's, actually. But anyhow, this guy was, you know, we sit next to him. We were chatting about beer, and he suggested that I check out this one restaurant in what was really the not yet hip Bywater neighborhood in New Orleans. Now, it's since just sort of blown up, and it is like hipster ground zero in New Orleans. But Bywater back then, nobody really knew about it, and it turned out to be a great recommendation. But I have to tell you that I get less and less of that sort of serendipity interaction as people eat and then just interact with their smartphones. Now, I don't know, maybe Claire wouldn't be sort of keen on random bar conversations, but I kind of miss it. Nowadays, though, where I do find interaction is in microbrewery tap rooms. I mean, sure, so, you know, people still have got their phones out to sort of check in that tasting flight into Untappd, but there's an acceptance, really almost an expectation if you're sitting at that tap room bar, that people are going to kind of nerd out about hops and malt and yeast esters with sort of each other and with the folks behind the bar. Actually, during one of my Dallas trips last fall, I sort of found my way to Grapevine Craft Brewing on a Wednesday night. The brewmaster was behind the bar, so he was pulling the taps. He was also sort of passing out some barrel samples, and we were all spinning our beer nerd propellers really, really hard. It was, from an interaction standpoint, you know, some people might have rolled their eyes, but for me, beat the hell out of an early night in the hotel. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is from the Travel Story Archives. Please, airlines, just tell us a little more. Prepping for the interview with our local paper caused me to kind of go spelunking deep into the Travel Commons archives just to be able to talk about a little bit of the history of how this podcast got started. It also got me fixing some broken links and then also listening to some of the early shows really for the first time in a very long time. A couple of things struck me when I was listening to some of those early shows. The really poor sound quality that I got from that little iRiver MP3 recorder that I was using at the beginning, but also how good some of those early travel stories were. And so here's one from episode 15 back in 2005, the very longtime Travel Commons listener, Alan Marco, talking about wanting to know just a little bit more about what an airline maintenance guy is doing.
we're in the waiting area, and the plane's out there, and they said, well, it's going to be delayed for about a half an hour. The flight was coming in from someplace like Chicago or something, and they told us it got struck by lightning on the way in. That's all they told us at the time. And so we're just sitting around, and we notice that out comes this mechanic guy with, you know, an extension ladder. It's like 10 feet outside the window is the nose of the plane. And he comes right over to the nose, and he puts the extension ladder up against the plane, and he climbs up. He's got a roll of duct tape dangling from his belt. And, you know, at this time, a small crowd has gathered at the window, and they're looking at the guy, because this is the plane we're going to be flying to Paris in. It's like, what is he doing out there? You know, he's kind of like monkeying around with, like, you know, it looked like he was scraping paint off or something. And he takes the roll of duct tape off his belt, and he rips off like a 6-inch piece. And he just slaps it on the plane, on the nose of the plane. And he's rubbing it and make sure that it's, you know, it's okay. And then he kind of looks over, and he notices like 30 people staring at him with kind of like this shocked expression on their faces, like, what's going on out there? And he's nodding his head, kind of like, you know, we can't hear him through the glass, but he's kind of like saying, no, it's okay, it's okay. So he climbs down the ladder, and like 2 minutes later, he shows up on the jetway. He's knocking on the door, and the attendant lets him back into the waiting area at the gate area, and he says, folks, I just want to tell you, the plane was struck by lightning, and the lightning found a defect in one of the rivets, and that's where it exited. It found a rivet, and it kind of blew it out, and they had to locate it, and they did locate it, and he's like, it's not duct tape, it's a Teflon tape, and it's only temporary, the plane's fine. So he put us all at ease with his explanation, but it was pretty interesting to observe when it was happening.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of Trevor Cummins podcast number 149 from lovely, scenic State College, Pennsylvania. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out show notes for the music links. Find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, and Spotify. The links along with the RSS feeds for all you geeks. I actually mentioned RSS feeds to somebody the other day, and they just looked at me wide-eyed, maybe frightened. They didn't know what I was talking about. But anyhow, if you do, all those links are on the right-hand side of the Trevor Cummins website under the heading Subscribe. And then right below that, in the social media section, are links to the Trevor Cummins Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. Hey, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comment, COMMENTS at TrevorCummins.com, and Peacock on Twitter, the Trevor Cummins page on Facebook, the Trevor Cummins Instagram site, post them on the website. Comments, you know, little comments on travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has sent in emails, tweets, and posts, comments on the website. I really do appreciate it. And so until next month, because we're, like I said, about ready to head out to Brittany. So take care, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Trevor Cummins. Bye now.